Mini episode 967 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini-episode number 967 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here. We have a great guest with us today for the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider. We are doing another one of these fantasy versions of the FDH Lounge, and we are bringing you today a preview of the 2018 fantasy baseball season with a gentleman that we have been happy to feature before. Very happy to get him back on, Paul Shapiro from RotoExperts.com, getting him on there. And again, you can find some great columns that he has up on the site. There's going to be another one, I understand, forthcoming, so we're going to get into all that and much, much more as we look ahead to 2018. Paul, welcome back to the program. So good to have you on today, my man.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me. Baseball getting started tomorrow.
Excellent, yes. And I understand from what you were telling me off air, you're going to be taking it in person at Citi Field. So that sounds like it's going to be a blast. And you will get to see the faces of 2018 getting it done on opening day. And a lot of times, again, there are memorable performances that you get a chance to see once it all starts. I was at an auction the other day when some folks were chortling about, because we're also in another league, a bunch of us, that's going to be drafting tomorrow night as we're recording this, so opening day, that if somebody has a Tuffy Rhodes-type performance circa 94, they're going to go 10 rounds higher than they should have gone. So opening day is an animal all its own, and again, the time for guys like me and you to put to work a winner's worth of insights. And as you get out there tomorrow and you prepare to take it all in, what are some of your, I'll start with this, kind of big picture thoughts about the fantasy landscape as we head into 2018?
I mean, just looking at the way that baseball has now become, it's everybody hits home runs now, and where that used to be, you have trouble finding that 30-35 home run guy. Now in fantasy sports, you can wait on that and pick up a player late in the draft who is going to hit you those home runs with the new and improved juice balls that are now back in play in Major League Baseball.
That is a great point, and it brings to mind something. I'm going to cite this here from our draft guide, Fantasy Baseball Draftology 2018. Of course, you can find it on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. As I flip to page 20 here, this is something that we've been tracking the last couple of years, is just an index of some of the statistical indicators against one another, going all the way back to 1968. And there's a number that I haven't seen in that entire period of time until now, Paul. I'm looking at this 2.41, and that is the ratio of home runs to stolen bases last year. It was pretty big the year before, 2.20. It's rare for it to get above 2 or for it to even get close to 2, but last year it just blew way past it. So what you're talking about as far as the offense and the home run ball in particular being so plentiful, that is really doing a heck of a lot to drive up the value of the stolen bases out there, because they are increasingly rare relative to this plethora of home runs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a player that I'm targeting in every draft that I've had and that I will be in moving forward, I have one tonight, he's actually a keeper on that team, is D. Gordon. I think him being in Seattle in that lineup with his dual position eligibility once he gets the games played in center field gives him supreme value, especially because he provides that batting average as well, where a guy like Billy Hamilton, you're getting 220. There's such a difference between those two guys that I have D. Gordon on my must-draft no matter what list.
Absolutely. I think that makes a lot of sense for the very reasons that you cited. And again, the value that he brings you with the speed and the fact that, again, as you said, unlike Hamilton, he can make great contact with the ball. That is a wonderful point on your part there. I'm looking at this as well, that there has just been this sort of driving ever upwards towards the three true outcomes in baseball. Looking at it last year, again, this index of statistics, 16.5 last year on the average of strikeouts per game. The way that that has just exploded, it's gone up by about a quarter over the last several years. So you look at that, the home runs are still, again, just ever increasing at this point for a number of reasons. As you said, the juiced ball among them, hitters adjusting their swing planes accordingly. I joked to you off air about how much Yandy Diaz needs to do that. That's something we're pulling our hair about out in Cleveland, is the fact that he can't do it or won't do it. But you've got the contact with the balls flying out of the park. But also the windmilling here of a lot of the strikeouts accompanying it. And it just makes for a different landscape. For as much as people want to compare it to the steroid era, that was something where really offense was up across the board. Now it's pretty much just isolated to the long ball and to the damage that's being done when the ball is flying out of the park.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at a guy like Aaron Judge. He's going to strike out 200 times, but the Yankees were considering leading him off.
Yeah.
Just think about that. It doesn't make any sense, but he's your best hitter. He still gets on base. That's what it comes down to. When his OBP is over 400, he's getting on base as much, if not more, than Brett Gardner, who's hitting the ball on the ground. Where I understand it, but at the same time, a baseball fundamentalist, it just doesn't make any sense.
I'm with you on that. I'm very much old school as far as my conception of what a lineup is supposed to look like, and there's supposed to be at least some component of speed towards the top of the lineup. And again, you would think now more than ever, as much as the stolen bases are getting to be rare in terms of the plentiful home runs that are out there by comparison, yeah, you would think speed would be prized on top of the lineup. But you're absolutely right about that, that the on-base percentage, that yeah, if you're up there towards 400 or thereabouts, you're going to be up towards the top of a lot of lineups, notwithstanding the notion that on paper you're sacrificing RBI opportunities, notwithstanding the fact that you're sacrificing the traditional speed in many instances at the top of the lineup. It really is a revolutionary approach to making out lineup cards that managers have been embracing in recent years, and there is that trickle down to fantasy in terms of the production that you're getting from your guys.
Yeah, I mean, a player that, you know, obviously an Aaron Judge, I think being a two- or three-hitter just makes more sense that way. Look, he's a first-round pick in every fantasy draft. Same with Giancarlo Stanton. You can put them, you know, they should both be top 12, top 15 guys solely because they're going to hit, let's say, 50 home runs each, which I don't think is an overstatement. And then you have a guy like Brett Gardner who's going 150, 200 picks later, but you're, instead of 50 home runs and, let's say, 5 stolen bases, from him you're going to get a 2020 season where it's where is the value? What do you need on your team? It seems like there's home runs everywhere, but you still have these big boppers that are the first-round picks in fantasy baseball, and I don't think you can get away from that. You know, when you have a player, every time you hit a home run, you get a plus in 3 stats. 4, actually. So you're getting the run, you're getting the RBI, you're getting the home run, and it's a hit, which gets you an average as well, where I think that's the power of the long ball, is you get 4 stats versus the leadoff hitter. Yes, he'll steal you bases, but he might not help you in those 4 categories with a single hit.
Absolutely. And in terms of what you can get off of that single hit, like you said, that so much more that it can bring you, and when you're looking at it in terms of the all-around type of ability that some of these players have in today's game, it really is interesting. I would tend to agree with you that Judge and Stanton are certainly going to be consensus top 15 picks in a lot of leagues out there. And again, pretty much anybody listening to the show knows a lot of the names that we would be talking about in that regard. In terms of the pitchers, I will say this, that this is a notion that we've had at FantasyDraftHelp.com this year, that basically you take in whatever order and you draw a line underneath, I would say, Sale, Kershaw, Kluber, and Scherzer, that you want to get one of those four guys, but if you don't, I would say hold off a while, don't chase, maybe wait another round or two, and then start going into it. And again, you don't want to neglect it for that long if you're waiting till like the fourth round or whatever to take an arm. But what's your sense on that? Do you concur that there is a pretty strong line underneath those four guys this year?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question of that. Those four are otherworldly. You know, you're going to get an ERA of, let's say, 2.5, a 1.1 whip at worst, really, and you're getting 200, 300 strikeouts if Sale can do it again. But those four are leaps and bounds above everybody else, and then I completely agree. You can pick up some big-time hitters just after that, and then the pitching comes back around where, you know, there's a lot of guys that can get that 200 strikeouts, but a little later in the draft. You know, let's say a Robbie Ray type who did it last year. You don't have to waste that. Well, I'm saying waste that first, second, third round pick. But you know, he's in that next tier. His teammate Zach Greinke, similar. It's really pick your poison beyond that. You have all the Mets. You have DeGrom and Syndergaard. Which way are you going to go there? I'm a DeGrom guy, but Syndergaard's upside is through the roof.
You've got a lot of promise in that rotation, to be sure. And again, they have a manager who obviously is going to have to focus on the big picture aspect of it, as that is the literal job of being a manager. But in terms of contributions to that pitching staff, I can say this, being in Cleveland, that they couldn't have done any better, and my hometown Indians will certainly miss the contributions of Mickey Callaway in that regard. So from a fantasy standpoint, that's something you've got to be looking at and seeing how much he did for these Indian starters the last couple of years, none of whom came in really highly touted. Trevor Bauer, there'd been a little bit of tarnish on, he had been a high pick, but Arizona made him available. They basically gave up on him. Carlos Carrasco, the Indians got him about a year after his sell-by date, and Mickey Callaway made him into a star. So that's one of those things I would think for fantasy players out there, looking at that Mets pitching staff, a lot of injury risks to be sure, but if these guys are healthy, you got to think Mickey Callaway and company are going to get the most out of them.
Yes, especially with DeGrom and Syndergaard. Those two guys are, when they're healthy, they are so good. I mean, that they're going average draft position in the 30s could be a steal. Those are two guys that have the upside to end up in that top tier. They could be 5-6. They could be 3-5 by season's end. It's everybody is underestimating the Mets. Is really how I look at it. You forget, two seasons ago, they were in the World Series. Everything went wrong last year. Where even like a Cespedes going in the seventh round of drafts blows my mind. I'm taking him every time that he is there after the sixth round because he can be a top 20 player. And especially with Bruce in the lineup again after he left and now he's back. The protection is there again, and there's just supreme value because of all the injuries that happened to that team last year.
Yeah, that's true. People are really kind of sleeping on them. And again, if they pull it all together, if they have basically the best version of what they're capable of this year, you got to think that's going to get them a wild card, if nothing else. That's a team that certainly, yeah, they could put together 90 to 92 wins in an optimal scenario type season, and especially if they're looking to do a little bit of augmenting at the trading deadline, which has happened sometimes and not happened sometimes for the Mets in recent years. One of the trends as well the last couple of years in fantasy baseball, it's really kind of manifesting itself this year very strongly. You look at, again, in terms of quote-unquote real baseball and developments that happen there and how it trickles down onto the fantasy game, Joe Maddon doing what he has been doing over the last several years with the likes of Ben Zobrist and getting guys and moving them around. And again, it's a copycat game such that you've got a player this year where, again, I think his value is probably significantly higher at any of these positions collectively than they would be individually. That's Marwin Gonzalez, a guy who in 20 game leagues there where you have to put up 20 games to be eligible at a position, he is eligible all the way across the freaking infield, which is just amazing. Not that you'd necessarily want to start him at first base or third base long term, but you could. Any of the four infield positions, Marwin Gonzalez is really kind of the poster child for it. But this kind of flexibility that's there in the game right now is a beautiful thing if you can capitalize on it, because, again, that's one more thing that allows you to go best player available in the later rounds without having to worry about getting a backup at a certain position.
Absolutely. I mean, his ADP is around 130 right now, and you have to take it. I mean, looking at him, if I'm drafting him, I want to start him at second base, maybe shortstop.
Yep.
Because you can get... I mean, that's where you want the guy, but say there's an overabundance of everybody playing on a day. He can play the outfield, too. You can literally plug him in anywhere. Another similar player to that is Eduardo Nunez.
Yes.
Who I think, I mean, he's going to start opening day. Pedroia will come back, and we'll see what happens. But Nunez has proven to be such a solid player, like, you know, same boat, where they're going to find a way to get this guy 500 at-bats, which is what you need. He's going about a round later than Gonzalez, but they're very similar players. I think Gonzalez hits a couple more home runs. Nunez will steal a couple more bases. So I might lean to Nunez, especially playing at Fenway Park, where, you know, hitters can hit. It's real simple when you're in that Red Sox lineup.
Absolutely. And to a smaller degree, because, again, you're looking at obviously a lot more things than multi-position eligibility in the first two rounds, but you're seeing a little bit of it manifest itself there as well with Manny Machado now getting shortstop eligibility to go along with third base this year. Jose Ramirez from my Indians, second base and third base. Again, 9 times out of 10, you want to play him at second base, which ironically is not his regular position generally on the diamond, especially this year with Kipnis being back at second. But you'd rather play him at second, but you can play him at third in a pinch. A guy who we've got a little bit higher on our board than some places, Alex Bregman, who we've got 19 overall. That's a guy that can get you third base and shortstop eligibility. So even early on, that's something that could be maybe a tiebreaker consideration. If you're looking between two guys here, just the fact that you can play somebody at more than one position, that's just a nice little thing. The little things really kind of add up in the long run and really help you out a lot, I think, Paul.
Yeah, and how about Anthony Rizzo? If you're in a Yahoo league, you can play him at second base, which is fascinating. I mean, I'll take 32 homers and 110 RBIs for my second baseman.
That's a little farcical that they're doing that, but by all means, take advantage of it if you're in those leagues, people. That's a great point, Paul. That is a superlative point on your part, yeah, because there was a little bit of that, I think, in season last year with Freddie Freeman also. They were doing a little bit of moving him around the infield, and he picked up a little bit of spot eligibility at different positions as well. So it is great when you can find a loophole like that. Great call.
Yeah, Freeman is in Yahoo is eligible at first and third, which I look at them as one and the same. The fact that you're getting a Rizzo and he can play second base, that's I'm taking Rizzo over Freeman for that reason and that reason alone.
Absolutely, yeah, because like you said, at second base, it helps you out a lot more than it does at third base. And again, as we mentioned, there is a nice index of columns there that people can find under your name, at Roto Experts. But I know from talking to you off air, you've got another one that's going to be coming out here, and a little bit kind of similar to what you were doing with talking about some of the pitchers coming a little bit under the radar, the hitters that people are going to be looking to draft in some of the later rounds. So talk about that a little bit, and some of the guys that you think are going to be valuable on down the road in these drafts for people.
Yeah, sure. So what the article is focused on is players with an average draft position outside the top 200 that I think likely end up as top 100 players. From your hometown team, which we talked about off the air, is a guy like Jason Kipnis. Last year, he was just so broken down where if you look, the all-star in him and the top five second baseman in him is only a year removed. He looks healthy now. He's hitting the cover off the ball in spring training. And you're getting him outside the top 200. And I think outside of Altuve, Dozier, Shoup, and Murphy, depending when Murphy comes back, that Kipnis is that next guy. And you can get him in the 17th and 18th round of drafts, where you're going to get 20-plus homers, 15-plus stolen bases, 80-plus runs in RBIs, and a .275 batting average. Normally, if he wasn't coming off the year he was coming off last year, he's being drafted around 140, 150, not 220.
That's an interesting example right there. From your lips to God's ears with Kipnis, I can say as an Indians fan, from having seen that he'll go through Ryan Sandberg-type stretches in recent years here, I would give a qualified agreement to what you just said there, with the sense that if he's really doing that through May and June, I would stipulate that maybe people should take their profits at that point in time and let somebody else gamble on whether or not he stays in one piece the rest of the year. But that is a great example, because I must admit, even as jaded as I am about his entire stretch of play over the last several years, that he does have those stretches in him when he stays healthy, when he's in shape, which, again, a lot of his problems have come from not being in shape, and he does at least appear to be in shape this year, so you're right about that. But, yeah, as you said, anybody that is being drafted outside the top 200 that can give you top 100 production, that is certainly a tremendous amount of profit and another one of those building blocks to winning a championship.
Yeah, another guy, we're talking about stolen bases. Remember Jose Peraza?
Yeah.
Everybody was drafting in the top 100 last year. He's going outside 250 this year. I think this is screaming post-type sleeper, where last year he was overdrafted. He was going in the top 100 last year. Now you can take him with a 20th round pick and potentially get 35-plus stolen bases. And, there's no one standing in his way. He's going to be the second baseman on the Reds. We know they let their players run wild, a la Billy Hamilton. I think Peraza is an absolute and utter steal with, a last-round pick in a lot of drafts, where his upside plus a career .277 batting average, why not stick that guy on your bench and see if he's going to work things out and plug him in whenever you can? And, I think he's going to have 40 steals, because he's going to get those at-bats, he's going to be on the field. And I'm thinking everyone is overlooking him because it was so miserable last year. I love him. I absolutely love Peraza. I took him in our Roto Experts draft that we did a couple weeks back, and I had him as my starting second baseman, even though I took him in the 20th round.
Well, again, from your lips to God's ears, I say that not because Peraza plays in Ohio, because I don't really care about the Reds, but I got him in my auction on Sunday for like $9. So I am really,
yeah,
really, I'm hopeful. And that right there kind of proves what you're saying, because, and to be honest with you, I was like, okay, well, he's about what's left at this point. So I got him. I wasn't necessarily that excited about it, but you're making me feel better as you're making these excellent points here, because he has a chance to just blow away that $9 valuation. So I'm very glad to hear that, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. And now I know we talked that there's home runs and there's home runs everywhere. But the guy that I love outside the top 200 is Chris Davis in Baltimore, where if you can live with his .220 batting average, which you obviously have to if you're taking him, this guy in 2013 hit 53 home runs. And every season that he's gotten 500 at-bats, he has 33 or more home runs. In Baltimore, Great Hitters Park, I would rather have Chris Davis outside pick 200 than 100 picks earlier, where you're taking Joey Gallo, who's essentially the same player. 35 home runs, 85 runs, 90 RBIs. Why would you even consider Gallo at, let's say, pick 115, when you can go 100 picks later, have a veteran in Chris Davis who's done this over and over and over again, and you're going to get the same output? I think he is 35 free home runs in the 18th round.
That's an excellent point, and I got to say, that the Chris Davis thing, I think there's a little bit of, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, because last year the average of all batting averages in baseball was .255. 10 years before that, it was .268. So if he's hitting .220, it hurts you. It doesn't hurt you as much as it would have years ago, as we've moved more into this sort of all-or-nothing type world that, again, Chris Davis probably embodies more than just about anybody. So that's one of those things where if you're making that kind of a trade-off in this climate, it doesn't hurt you in terms of batting average as much as it did when players across the board were making better contact.
Right, and he's a shoo-in for 30 home runs. Even last year, he missed 30 games, and he still hit 26 in 128 games. He is the epitome of what baseball has become, but I think he was doing it before everybody else was, and that's why he's now under the radar, where in 2013, he batted about 280 that year, but since then, his average has dropped, but the home run production is still there. You're getting 35 jacks outside the 200th pick. You can't go wrong there.
Well, I think you have correctly identified what this is, and I'll have to say, if I ever refer to this again, subsequently trademark Paul Shapiro, but the Chris Davis era, I guess that's what we're in baseball. I guess he embodies it better than just about anybody. I think you are right about that, and again, look forward to what is going to be a great season, and I know a great season of your coverage over at Roto Experts. Paul Shapiro, always a pleasure to get you on the show. Look forward to doing it subsequently. Thank you so much for being on the program today, and enjoy opening day.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks again for having me.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much for being on, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini-episode number 967.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.